This is our perfo for preschoolers.
Senior Focus.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Khoury. I'm your presenter for this edition of Senior Focus. And I have with me today John Watson, who is a councillor for the Auckland City Council, the Albany Ward, and he also has a background as a historian and academic of history studies. So welcome, John.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. Thanks for having me on the show.
And this afternoon, our topic is going to be about the rates increase that was announced last week. And as some of you will be aware, I made a program last week discussing rates in general, increases and possible ways to cope with your rates increase, like the rates rebate scheme and the rates postponement schemes. But today I want to focus on getting a more balanced picture of this rates increase, because when I made the program, there's a gap always between recording the program and when we go to air. And I had misjudged the announcement by the council on the voting. So, in fact, by the time the program went to air, the 7.9% was already voted on, and that wasn't made clear in my program. So apologies if I've misled anybody. Today we're going to talk about the 7.9%, and John is presenting information that led to the seven councillors who voted for the 5.3%, the 2% reduction. But he's also presenting a wider look at the systemic problems that are facing us at Auckland Council long term if we keep on baking in these kinds of rates increases. So before we kick off, I'd just like to get this feeling of what it was like to be voting at the council to try and convince other councillors to go for a lower figure. And I'm wondering if you want to make any comment about that, John.
Yes, certainly, Anne-Marie. So the 7.9% average, and I stress that's it's an average. There's people have more and there's people have less. That is the highest rate increase in the history of the super city. So since 2010, that's been the highest average increase. But indeed, over the last couple of years, there's been other rate increases of 7.75, 6.8, and last year 5.8. Before the 7.9. So there's a kind of disturbing trend emerging where the rate increases are roughly getting to be, you know, double the rate of inflation. And if you go back a bit further and just look at the rate increases since the start of the super city, generally speaking, with odd exceptions from 2010 to 2020, the rate increases generally came in the 2.5 to the 3.5 range, but from 2022-23 onwards up to now, generally they've been from 6 to 8.8%. So it seems that over and above everything else, there's a bit of a structural change emerging that is seeing consistently higher rates levied on people. So that meeting last Tuesday, basically there was the division, if you like, within council was between those who there were seven or eight councillors at different times who opposed that record rates increase and were trying to go for something smaller, 5.9%, and the majority of 14 or 15, depending on which vote, who were going with the full 7.9%. So I guess my point is, Anne-Marie, is that if you just step back and look at the trends and kind of distance, individual years, there definitely seems to be a baking in now of larger and more significant rate increases well above the rate of inflation.
Yes, indeed. And there is a compounding factor in this too. So those people who can remember paying, say, $2,750 for rates, and that's ballpark, will now be facing something like $5,000 plus.
Yes, absolutely. If we go back to 2022-23, that financial year, the average rate payer was paying about $2,700. Now, this next financial year, they'll be paying nearly $4,400. So that's an increase in dollar terms of well over $1,500. So for most people, that increase alone, $1,579, that's like another big major bill that has to be met. And similarly with business properties too, their increase in rates over that same period have gone up by nearly $6,500. So I guess the other factor to chuck in for what it's worth, Emery, is that every 3 years is the revaluation of properties, and there are parts of Auckland, because it kind of evens out the property values, there are parts of Auckland who just last year were hit disproportionately bad by that. So in my ward and the Rodney ward, for instance, people, nearly half the ratepayers were paying increases of between 10 to 20% or higher. So those parts of Auckland are kind of backing up those massive increases with then this other very high average rate increase. And as you said, there's a compounding effect, because as your rates go higher, those increases obviously get baked in. And instead of, 8% on $2,700, it's 8% on $4,400, which is a lot more in dollar terms. So that, and in addition to the water care bill, which the average bill for most people is around about $1,300, the average property in Auckland now looking at about $5,675, which is a big jump from, 3 years ago.
Yes, thank you for presenting those figures. I was fortunate enough to see your slide presentation last Friday, where you set out a lot of this information very structurally, and it was very clear, and I think the visual impact was quite considerable. We can't do that, of course, but we can talk about the issues, and we will continue to do this over the rest of the year and into next year, because there are a lot of issues riding around this. One is, of course, the impact of intensification, but I'll move towards that later in the program. But just for now, I think the key thing here is it's the cumulative effect of these rate increases, but it's also that the water increase is a separate increase. And I noticed today in the Herald there's been an announcement about the water increase is going to be 7.3%.
Mm. Yes, it's been up in the sevens for a couple of years now, and that's almost like the forgotten bill, but of course not forgotten when it has to be paid. So I guess, there's a real question of affordability and sustainability, Anne-Marie, and I think it's important to note that it's not just, odd politicians that are saying this. The Auditor General did a report in 2024 after looking at councils. He did an audit of councils' long-term plans. So this was all councils. It wasn't just Auckland Council. And one of the conclusions was really quite stark, which stood out for me. The Auditor General said, and I'm quoting him verbatim here, "Councils are increasing rates at historically high levels, pay for much needed investment in infrastructure. Councils are also increasing their debt to some of the highest levels in decades. These factors create risks to councils' long-term financial sustainability and to their ability to respond to unforeseen events." So that was the Auditor General. I guess the other element to the sustainability coin is really the ability of residents to make those increased costs, particularly as that compounding effect starts to kick in. So that's quite a salutary warning, I think. And certainly if you look at the other big components in Auckland Council's kind of overall financial direction, they reinforce that view. For instance, the debt figures. So, and this is again just from 2022 to 23 up to now, this year's plan, debt has gone from 11.6 billion to projected 17 billion this year. That's an increase of 5.4 billion. 47% increase. That happens at the same time that the overall rates income has jumped up. So it's our rates revenue to the council has gone from 2.27 billion in 2022-23 to 3.35 billion this year. So that's an increase of 1.08 billion. So the rates income's up by nearly a billion. But at the same time, the debt is increasing over a 3-year period by 5.4 billion, and of course, along with that goes interest costs, which yearly now are going from 500 million roughly to 710 million, or nearly $2 million a day. So it's when you see those sort of figures that you get a sense that this is a trajectory that is going to be hard to turn around, because in Auckland's case, you also have to throw in for good measure the fact that we've had some massive asset sales. So the airport shares were sold off in the last term of council. They bought in $2.14 billion, nearly a billion of which, $835 million, just went down to pay debt. Now that's all gone. That's like a once in a lifetime windfall to a council. You know, when one of your, if not your biggest asset, in this case the Auckland International shares, are sold off to cope with the various financial pressures. But then that's gone, and snakes and ladders, you're back to where you started, and you've got the highest rate increase in the history of the super city. So those sorts of kind of trends, I think, really reinforce what the Auditor General was warning us about.
Yes, thank you for unpacking all that. I mean, the obvious increase in income comes from the intensification of housing going on and the apartment building and so on. But when you consider that the debt is rising at such a rate, that increase is going nowhere. And then the asset sales as well. And I mean, you did mention on Friday in your presentation about some of the other assets that had been sold off across Auckland. I mean, like the Rodney Council buildings.
Yeah, that's right. That's going back a couple of terms now. But, you know, a number of the council civic centres, you know, they were more than just kind of a room. They were quite substantial pieces of property in their own. You know, they've been sold off. I mean, I just calculated for my own ward, and that's, you know, that's just Albany ward, let alone there's at least $250 million worth of asset sales or property sales that have occurred in my ward since the start of the super city. So, that, you know, that's a massive big chunk of money, and that will be echoed to a greater or lesser extent in other parts of Auckland as well. So, you know, the assets are going and going fast. I mean, really, a lot of them, like the diversified assets portfolio, went quite some time ago. So these kind of gifts, if you like, or legacies of the old council have all but disappeared. So there's not much left in the kitty, and when they're gone, then all you're left with is kind of year on year rates increases, and that spectre, I think, is coming up rather fast.
It's very disturbing, particularly to think about the assets that are sold off, because once they've sold the silver, you can't resell it, so you can't get those assets back. And even though, yes, there are other investments that have been made to replace some of those assets, there's still many areas of the city that remain very poorly developed. And I'm thinking of Rodney in particular, where there are so many areas, rural roads with no curb and channelling. Even if a bus comes along, it can't really stop and allow passengers to get off with safety because they're getting off into shingle or a bog.
Yeah, if you were to go across Auckland, to be fair, and I think it's important to try and present a balanced view of it. If you looked all around, there have been any number of big substantial projects that have been put together, you know, over the last 16 years. So it's not as if there isn't very visible evidence of the investments of these big projects that have occurred, and that goes to every part of Auckland. It's not contrary to public belief, it's just confined to certain areas. Every area has benefited, but again, it comes back to that sustainability of investment that is still required to go in, you know, to go in, because Auckland has grown at such a phenomenal pace. It now takes in, you know, everywhere from Wellsford to Pukekohe, these, you know, big new developments put pressure on existing infrastructure. So it kind of makes you wonder whether, and I'm certainly not the first one to pose this question, is how rates can be expected to continue to fund all this. It, you know, if we look internationally, the percentage of spending on local government in New Zealand sits at about 11%, which is way, way beneath some of the European countries, which are up over 30%. So certainly in other parts of the world, there is a lot more invested in local government by central governments than is the case here. But you know, having said that, we've also been the beneficiary of a number of big NZTA projects. But if we're thinking of transport all around Auckland, with, you know, motorway extensions and projects like Penlink and whatnot that are 100% funded by NZTA. So there is a lot happening, but I guess the other side is there's still a lot to be done, and there are plenty of significant projects that have been on the books for well over a decade and haven't really, there's not much prospect of them getting built anytime soon. So it's a bit of a dilemma, you know, this constant demand for capital investment, but also these increasing rates bills and cost of projects that, you know, like the latest one of the, you know, the City Rail Link, which you really have to ask whether councils are capable of funding multi-billion dollar contributions to you know, transport infrastructure. I would suggest that we can't, and that in the case of Auckland, you know, the consequential blowout in the budget of the CRL is the kind of financial cost that you know, the public's going to have to wear for quite some time.
Yes, it's certainly a despairing sort of picture, because not only is the infrastructure list of spending growing, but we have also the problem of now these frequent weather events. And with the impact of climate change and these weather events, we are facing, you know, potential threats. And in Auckland, we, even with identifying floodplains and attempting some reorganising of planning around limiting building on these plains, I still see there's far too much development going on that's in the wrong places.
Yeah, well, we found out about that, you know, with the various cyclones a few years ago. I mean, that wreaked huge damage, and then a huge recovery bill to clean up and I know in every part of Auckland, people will be aware of massive big roadworks that had to be done, properties that were bought out. And that now is a new normal. I think, we our area haven't seen the last of those climate-related disasters, just like, other parts of New Zealand. So we're into a new era again that really requires the budgeting or the ability to make appropriate payment to reconstruction when these events inevitably come along. So again, we're into a different era where that sort of unbudgeted or unexpected expense and substantial expense is going to be, more of a common experience, unfortunately. So which adds into the mix of where is all this money and investment is going to continue to come from, because the kind of payouts and that occurred as a consequence of the cyclones in Auckland, they're not going to be repeated in the same way they were this time, with that kind of agreement between the government and the council, because it's also helping it happen in other parts of New Zealand as well. So all of which means I think it's an apt time for reflecting on the overall directions of local governments, and particularly of the sustainability of the financing model that has dominated for decades now.
Yes, well, in talking reviews, you did mention on Friday that we haven't had a formal review by local government, the local government commission, of the super city, of whether it's successful, whether it has achieved the objective, which was to reduce costs for individuals, and whether it's actually sustainable in its current form. And this question, I think, is a really pressing one.
Yes, well, one of the supreme ironies of the whole super city is that in the 16 years of its existence, and that's of the biggest reorganisation of local government in New Zealand's history, there hasn't been a single review of the council at all by successive governments. So you have this comical situation where you had this huge change and various assurances given, but there's never been any examination, no independent examination of how it's all worked out. There has been reviews of the CCOs, which Mayor Gough commissioned at one time, and they were sort of revealing and damning in their own way for some of them. But as far as the substance of the council goes, there's been no look at it. Now, that's really something that needs to be rectified, because how can you determine whether, this huge change, kind of driven by quite ideological factors, has actually worked, and whether we should be persisting with it. Now, I don't think anyone's suggesting you pull everything to bits and start again, but I think there's a real case to be made for looking at a model that was more similar or more akin to what the Royal Commission recommended at the time, which was like three or four smaller councils rather than this one, massive entity. And that would be big enough. What people don't seem to realise is that even a lot of bigger cities overseas, most of them, they have far smaller councils than Auckland. So that the notion that big is best, we know that doesn't necessarily hold true with all manner of things, but I think in terms of local government, it's especially the case. And I think, if we look at some of the other factors, like the turnouts in local government elections, the last election was only 29% of people could be bothered to vote. If you look at the kind of lack of civic awareness, aside from all the financial pressures and complaints, there's just a kind of lack of resonance with Aucklanders, and that's not healthy for a democracy. And I think part of the issue, at least, is this model that we've been stuck with. If you go around different parts of Auckland, it's pretty clear people still have a lot more of an affinity with with their old legacy type of council. Now, we can't go back to that for a variety of reasons, but we could certainly look at something that was a bit of an in-between house, which split up into, you know, a couple of bigger regional local councils and had representation that was a lot more, I think, attuned to the particular area and allow people, you know, to kind of determine their own way, because every part of Auckland, you know, has its own dynamics. And I don't think, you know, just the notion that this kind of super metropolis somehow is beneficial for everyone. Quite the reverse, because what the council polling itself shows is that consistently over the period of the super city, there's been very low approval ratings for trust and confidence in the council's decision making. That's been one factor that has been consistent. So rather than just, you know, sort of stumbling on for the next decade, I would, and I know there are, I'm certainly not the only one, I think there's probably a bit of a groundswell amongst certain parts of Auckland anyway, for looking at a different kind of council format within that, without going back to the start where it was more localised, though still big enough to, you know, to have the ability to deliver all the facilities, and that conceivably could result in better outcomes over a number of different variables.
Indeed. I'm thinking of Brisbane and how they finally saw the light with the rates increases, and they chopped up 30 councils that had been formed into one, and then came back to a total of six councils. So I can see where you're going with this and how important it is. It's a conversation that needs to happen across Auckland. Thank you for your time, John, and your input today, and we'll look forward to continuing this over the year.
Thank you very much, Anne-Marie, for having me on, and all the best for the rest of your programs.
Thanks.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.
Scarborough Fair, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine. Sage, rosemary, and thyme, snowspire, and snow-crested brown. Without no snow or night, over the child of a mountain, she'll be a true love of mine. Strands and polishes of gold, she'll be a true love of mine. Tell her to reap in a sickle mill, or blazing in scar.